News 18 Daybreak, the perfect way to get you started and informed for the day ahead.
Hello and welcome to News 18's morning podcast Daybreak. I'm Pathikrit Sengupta. Let's have a listen to some of the top stories at this time. Prime Minister Narendra Modi and Chinese President Xi Jinping will sit down at the 7th century Shore Temple complex overlooking the Bay of Bengal in the bustling ancient town of Mamallapuram today, in an attempt to reconfigure ties strained by tough talk on the issue of Kashmir by both sides. A red carpet welcome awaits Xi when he arrives here around 5 p.m., with both the state and the central government agencies making all-out efforts to deck up the coastal town that had strong historical linkages with China's Fujian province. Ahead of the two-day summit, Chinese Ambassador to India Sun Weidong said that a new set of consensus, including guiding principles on giving a new direction to the bilateral ties, are expected from the engagement. The summit will take place amid a renewed strain in ties between the two countries over the Kashmir issue. A joint statement issued after talks between Xi and Pakistan Prime Minister Imran Khan on Wednesday said China is paying close attention to the situation in Kashmir and that it should be properly and peacefully resolved based on the UN Charter. External Affairs Ministry spokesperson Ravish Kumar, in a reaction, said India's consistent and clear position has been that Jammu and Kashmir is an integral part of the country and China is well aware of New Delhi's position. Government sources have made it clear that, like the first informal summit in Wuhan, there will be no statement or joint communique by both sides after the visit, as it is an informal and unstructured meet. They also said that Modi will not raise the issue of Article 370, as it is an internal matter of India and a sovereign decision. However, in case Xi wants more clarity, the matter could be taken up. The summit also comes against the backdrop of China's growing trade friction with the US. Both Modi and Xi are likely to explore ways of expanding trade and business ties. India is expected to raise the issue of ballooning trade deficit in China's favor, said the sources, adding that political relations, trade and ways to maintain peace and tranquility along the nearly 3,500-kilometer border between the two nations will be a major focus area in the talks. And electioneering for the 8 assembly seats in Maharashtra's Amravati will gain momentum today when BJP President Amit Shah and Shiv Sena Chief Uddhav Thackeray will address separate rallies in the district located in the Vidarbha region. Shah will address a public gathering in Melghat constituency, a tribal belt where the BJP has fielded Ramesh Mavaskar, a fresh face, in place of sitting MLA Prabhudas Bhilavekar. Mavaskar is pitted against NCP's Keval Ram Kale. Thackeray will address a public meeting at the Dashera Maidan in Amravati city to campaign for Shiv Sena candidates Preeti Bandh from Badnera, Rajesh Vankhade from Teosa, and Sunita Fiske from Achalpur. In Badnera, Preeti Bandh, the widow of former Sena MLA Sanjay Bandh, is pitted against two-term independent MLA Ravi Rana, who has the backing of the opposition Congress and NCP. In Teosa, Vankhade is taking on Congress MLA Yashumati Thakur, who is eyeing a hat-trick. In Achalpur, Fiske, the local municipal council president, is contesting against three-term independent MLA Bachchu Kadu. Polling for the 288 assembly seats in the state will be held on October 21 and counting of votes will take place on October 24. After the release on Thursday of three mainstream political leaders who were under detention for over 2 months, the Jammu and Kashmir administration plans to release more politicians in the coming week. These leaders were detained since August 5, the day the center revoked Jammu and Kashmir's special status and bifurcated it into two union territories. According to sources, among those set to be released are IS-turned-politician Shah Faisal, National Conference leader and former legislator from Ganderbal Ishfaq Jabbar, and Yasir Reshi, former PDP member of Legislative Council. Faisal, a topper of the 2009 UPSC Civil Services exams, resigned from the government services and joined mainstream politics in January. 2 months later, he launched his own political party, the Jammu and Kashmir People's Movement. Faisal is likely to be released next week, a source in the J&K administration told News 18. Sources added that the decision to release Faisal is being taken as he is likely to call off his political innings. He will quit mainstream politics and probably head to the United States for academics, sources close to him said. A party source said Faisal was disappointed with mainstream politics after the government's August 5 decision. Faisal was stopped from flying out of the country at the Delhi airport on August 14 and sent back to Srinagar, where he was placed under preventive detention. His wife challenged this move, only to later withdraw the petition in the Delhi High Court. Shehla Rashid, Faisal's ally and former students' union leader of the Jawaharlal Nehru University, on Wednesday had announced her decision to quit the electoral mainstream. Rashid said the decision was in protest against the centre's current actions in Kashmir, saying she cannot be a party to what she called legitimizing the brutal suppression of people. Faisal, sources said, will also cite the same reasons. And Turkey pounded Kurdish militia in northeast Syria for a second day, forcing tens of thousands of people to flee and killing dozens in a cross-border assault on US allies that has turned the Washington establishment against Donald Trump. The Turkish offensive against the US-allied Syrian Democratic Forces, launched days after Trump pulled US troops out of the way, opens one of the biggest new fronts in years in an 8-year-old civil war that has drawn in global powers. At least 23 fighters with the Kurdish-led Syrian Democratic Forces and 6 fighters with a Turkish-backed Syrian rebel group had been killed, said the Syrian Observatory for Human Rights, which monitors Syria's 8-year-old war. The SDF said Turkish airstrikes and shelling had also killed 9 civilians. In an apparent retaliation by Kurdish-led forces, 6 people, including a 9-month-old baby, were killed by mortar and rocket fire into Turkish border towns, officials in southeastern Turkey said. The International Rescue Committee said 64,000 people in Syria have fled since the campaign began. The towns of Ras Al-Ain and Darbasia, some 60 kilometers to the east, have been largely deserted as a result of the attack. The observatory said Turkish forces had seized 2 villages near Ras Al-Ain and 5 near the town of Tel Abyad, while a spokesman for Syrian rebel forces said the towns were surrounded after fighters seized the villages around them. Turkey's defense ministry said 174 militants had been killed so far. Kurds said they were resisting the assault. And Iranian women watched the country's national football team for the first time in 40 years on Thursday, celebrating their long-awaited access to the national stadium, but also paying tribute to the Blue Girl fan who died last month. Iran, one of the traditional powerhouses of Asian football with a passionate fan base, won their World Cup qualifying match against Cambodia 14-0. But the one-sided game will be remembered much more for the scenes in the stands. Waving flags, blowing vuvuzela plastic horns, and displaying the team colors of red, green, and white, over 3,000 women watched from a special women-only section in the Azadi Stadium. Women have been banned from watching men's games in Iran since shortly after the 1979 Islamic Revolution, with only a few exceptions made for small groups on rare occasions. But under pressure from world football's governing body FIFA and women's rights campaigners, Iranian authorities earmarked tickets for women to watch Thursday's game. FIFA had sent a delegation to Tehran to ensure that women were allowed to attend the game following the death last month of Sahar Khodiari, who set herself on fire to protest against her arrest for trying to get into a match. Dubbed Blue Girl Online for her favorite team's colors, Khodiari had feared being jailed for 6 months by the Islamic Revolutionary Court for trying to enter a stadium dressed as a man. Video footage of the crowd at Thursday's match posted on Twitter showed some supporters chanting Blue Girl, Blue Girl. Other videos showed supporters chanting FIFA, thank you. While Iran's dominant performance ensured little drama on the field, there was no shortage of emotion in the crowd. We have an incredible feeling as the first Iranian women entering the stadium, said one fan, interviewed by local television. Inshallah, from now on, all of our friends will also be able to come. Because we had restrictions, this is very appealing to us. Otherwise, it is not something special, she said. The game was sparsely attended, but an extra area, next to the designated women's section, was opened for what appeared to be women who did not have tickets for the arranged area. At the end of the game, the Iranian players ran over to the women's section to show their appreciation for their support. Right, everyone, that's all for today. But we will be back again next week with a fresh dose of news for you. In the meantime, don't forget to subscribe to the newsletter Daybreak at news18.com and do follow the website for more news and developments. Thank you for listening. Have a very good day and a great weekend.
News 18 Daybreak, the perfect way to get you started and informed for the day ahead.